It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, El Higo and Pachismo. Hi, guys.
Hello, sir or madam. I am working my way through college by selling this Pataplan lifestyle kit. Would you be interested? No, wait, where are you going?
Many, many nights we sit and talk about the legend of El Higo and how he liberated our village. And
again,
we say, Arriba, El Higo.
It's actually, as you've figured out by now, undoubtedly David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels, like it always is. Gentlemen, I would like a roast beef and gefilte fish sandwich, please.
Oh, no. Now you've got to meet Elisha Cook Jr.
Do you want a toothpick?
For ice pick.
Ah.
This is The Legacy of Garwood Huddle, Season 5, Episode 4, in which Pat Hingle, who you might remember from Batman, that's where I remember Pat Hingle, the original Michael Keaton Batman film, he's Garwood Huddle, and his friend is El Higo. But before we get to that, folks, this episode starts out with a newsreel from the 40s being narrated by a newsreel narrator. And who is the definitive newsreel narrator, even in 1984 when nobody knew who he was? Why, it's Phil Hartman.
Yes. Why, that's right, Jason. It is Phil Hartman his 1940s radio voice.
You may recognize me from such things as Magnum P.I.'s The Legacy of Garwood Huddle.
I mean, this is when he is just at the Groundlings. He hasn't done it. He hasn't even done Pee-wee's Playhouse. That's
no, but obviously there was somebody involved in Magnum P.I. who was like, oh, I know a guy who does a voice that is a newsreel voice. And it was Phil Hartman, right? Like somebody knew somebody who was like, I know the guy who does that voice. And he does, as the man of a thousand voices. He absolutely, that is the newsreel voice.
So, it's brilliant.
But it's so delightful because, you know, it's trying to sort of explain things about the plot of this episode. And I just sit here thinking like it's a Simpsons bit because it's Hartman.
Troy McClure is getting work still.
Yeah.
It totally took me out. Like I had it on the TV speaker at first. And as it comes on, I just went, oh my God, I think that's Phil Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put my earbuds in and turned it up and wound it back and was like, oh my God, I think it is Phil Hartman. And then I looked it up and it was Phil Hartman.
Absolutely Phil
Hartman. My wife was listening to the episode, and as the newsreel continues, she looks more and more confused. Yeah. Like, I know that guy.
Yeah, how could it be?
And it's funny because we recently recorded Alliance Tower Shields about the Manchurian Candidate, and I had forgotten that starts out with Paul Frees narrating, which takes me right out of the movie because he's narrating just like he does in the History of the United States of America, Part 1. It's really weird. It's just, where's the comedy? This isn't funny.
So Garwood Huddle is a legendary bank robber who robs banks with rubber guns.
Yes.
He robs from the rich and gives to himself.
And occasionally the poor.
And sometimes the poor gets their share.
There's a bit of the John Dillinger. They take the, well, let's take the nice bits of the John Dillinger and Bonnie and Clyde legend and attribute it to this guy.
And
make it in the 40s, was he a bank
robber? Yeah,
And
in his retirement, by the way, he's robbing banks in Hawaii and doing time in Hawaii for his retirement, you know, because he's an old man now.
Continuing to rob banks. He found a thing and he stuck to it.
Yeah.
If you do what you love, you'll never work a day
That's
in your life. So you will go
in
to
the prison laundry.
Yes, depending.
In the prison laundry. He knows El Higo because in 1944, the Third Reich, for some reason, kept a very secret plan in a Mexican bank. Why? I don't know, but MI6 needed it. And so they hired Garwood Huddle to rob the bank to make it look like a regular robbery. But in fact, he was getting the top secret Third Reich plans. And Higgins, when he was a spy, worked with them on that. Whatever. What it means is that when Garwood Huddle breaks out of his minimum security prison, which we'll later see is essentially a park in Hawaii with a chain link fence attached to it. We said minimum, we mean it. In Hawaii, we really mean minimum security. He goes to the estate, and Higgins explains to Magnum, who wants to go play baseball and is dressed up in his full Detroit Tigers baseball outfit, no, you can't, because you gotta help Garwood Huddle. Because his grandson was kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And Magnum's like, no, what, you just get the cops involved, you know. They find about the ransom note, and Garwin Huddle's like, I got the ransom note. I got all the leads. You got to work with me here. And thus begins The Legacy of Garwood Huddle, an episode directed by Vincent McGeevity of Star Trek The Original Series fame, and of course, starring, among others, Elisha Cook Jr., who also appeared in Star Trek. That's my little retroactive segment called, Hey, were people from Star Trek in this? Yes. Yeah. And that's the end of that segment.
I got some more people who are not from Star Trek, but from other really weird things.
We haven't introduced any other characters.
We're gonna get a guy soon. But
there is a guy. We'll do it as we go.
Very soon.
As we go. Mm-hmm.
So Garwood Huddle says, I would like to
actually point out something that's related to the plot at hand, which is the news report. Higgins has taped really kind of goes, first off, they report on the escape of this famous yet really low-level criminal as the lead story.
Yeah.
And then they go, and in other news, his adorable grandson has been abducted.
Yeah, it is.
What are the odds?
And it's one of those sort of like highly filmed and high-quality TV news report, which does not actually exist except on TV.
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly in that era.
Yeah. So anyway, he did a robbery and has the money for the ransom, and he buried it in a vacant lot. So okay. So that's fine.
So the job is that Garwood and Magnum are going to go retrieve the money.
From the vacant lot.
From the vacant lot, yes. So that they can pay off the ransom and get the adorable Moppet
exactly.
back.
Except the vacant lot is actually a massage parlor with instrumental jazz music playing. That's the music of sex.
Yes.
The music of sex in a brothel. They pay for a real massage, none of this other business. And then they tie her up.
They tie up the masseuse. And the way that she protests is, this is not the first time that a client has let in his buddy through the window with pickaxes.
Yeah, you're gonna,
she's
gonna,
all, oh, gonna no, extra. Not again.
It's going to be extra. Anyway, they dig and dig and dig and find the box, and it's empty. And this is really how the plot gets going, because it's like there's nobody left alive who should have known that this box was here. Mm-hmm. And he lists off, conveniently listing off a bunch of people, which is going to be our list. And he mentions, yes, well, my son knew, but he passed away. And you're like, oh, well, then it's obviously not him. And he says, wait. He died in a horrible accident. Okay, we get it. It can't be him. In fact, there was nothing left of him but his boots. Oh, you mean your son's actually alive and faked his death then?
Yeah, it's Chekhov's habeas corpus.
I mean, it's like Garwood just stopped talking and we believe you. He's like, I got to get to this part where the body was never found.
I have more details.
And I will say, this is not the only time in this episode where we get a, hey, did you get the Chekhov's gun? No, this is the gun. No, it's Chekhov's gun.
Is there a gun over there?
More.
Look, it's not really relevant to the, I think you should look at the gun. All right. Ooh. Okay. All right. Fine.
I mean, this is, I will say, I remember not liking it at the time. I liked it better this time.
I like this episode, but there's things. So
it's so goofy, but I was going to say it's a one-time first-time writer who never wrote another Magnum again. Kind of shows.
Yeah. Mm. It's, we go off to the daughter's house. His daughter-in-law. Right. His son is dead. She is raising Garwood Huddle the third, who has been kidnapped, and she has a new boyfriend.
Because his son is dead.
Because his son is totally dead, and they found nothing but his boots.
Mostly, certainly dead.
There was a big explosion, and then there were boots, and that's how we know
he
died.
If he was alive, he would have grabbed his boots.
If he was alive, there would be bones in those boots or what? Mm-hmm. Something. I don't know how it works. Anyway, guess who her boyfriend is? Norm. No, it's not.
Norm!
It's not George Wendt. Oh. It's Cliff Clavin, though, himself, John Ratzenberger. He is selling like Herbalife, basically.
Yeah, it's
like Herbalife Shaq.
It's generic. It's literally generic products with a brand name on them. They're white with the blue and the lowercase, except that they're all this Pat Plan cult. He's basically at the very bottom of a pyramid scheme.
We are trying to make it as much like Amway and Herbalife and all that without getting sued out of existence.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, and the generic products, people can't really do a trade dress suit against them, so they just sort of use generic. Anyway, the idea there is it's giving you the impression he's kind of a loser.
Yes.
And also by casting John Ratzenberger.
Yes.
Gives you that impression.
You did not cast John Ratzenberger for the suave man about town role.
That's a winning.
Yeah.
And by the way, Garwood Huddle's daughter-in-law is Doogie Howser's mom.
Belinda Montgomery.
Montgomery.
All our old friends are showing up, including Garwood Huddle in the house that they're all in. Now, this is a thing that really knocked me out. Apparently, the baby was abducted right there in the house. She was doing something. She turns around. Baby's gone.
Yeah.
They're talking to Maggie,
toddler,
telling him all this. They turn around. Old Garwood Huddle is there.
But the
security in this house sucks, lady.
It's not a high security place. And of course, Magnus, because Garwood's out on the. This is, by the way, for an episode in which a character has escaped from jail and is on the loose and everybody's looking for him. This episode, at no point do you feel that Garwood Huddle is in any danger of being caught by the cops. The closest it comes is when he breaks in to the house where his grandson has been kidnapped, and they say, "Oh, the cop is coming back," and he very leisurely strolls out the back door. He is never in any jeopardy. It's kind of hilarious how it doesn't matter.
Especially on a show renowned for its chases, there is absolutely no police chase of an on-the-limb Garwood Huddle.
However, in one of those things that I think, based on the stuff that we've talked about here, I really like this scene. They get into the Ferrari to leave, and he says, "Oh yeah, you picked me up in your big red fancy sports car like this, real inconspicuous."
Yes.
I thought El Higo told me you were really good, and my man goes, "Well, I am good. Wait a second. Tell me everything he said about me."
Wait, and he goes, he said that?
He said
Which
that?
Is it's just this
yeah, it's
wonder
so
he underplays that line so well.
It's so good.
When Pat Hingle is complaining about the inconspicuousness of the Ferrari, I said, "Oh, I feel seen. Thank you, Pat Hingle." Which leads me to a segment I'd like to introduce.
Yes.
Okay.
That I'm calling Hingle All the Way. Friends.
Okay. All right.
The holidays are coming up for this bit. They actually are coming up, but depending on when you're listening to it. And I would like to just go around the table and talk about the movies that we recommend of Pat Hingle's that people should show during the Yuletide season. I'll get us started. Okay. I would show The Grifters, where Pat Hingle plays the villainous Bobo Justice, who, like Santa Claus, knows when you've been naughty and nice and will hit you with a sock full of oranges to instead of leaving a lump of coal. And I think that gets home the true meaning of the season. So at your holiday get-together, please watch The Grifters. Jason?
I am going to say, you know what? You know where I'm going with this. He is a fanciful character who also knows if you've been naughty or nice. And if you've been naughty, he may spray you with acid. Mm. It's Jack Nicholson as the Joker in Batman.
Yes.
He's a very, I would argue Batman is a Christmas movie, you see.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Because
they have a celebration at the end. Why not?
There is celebration. There is a flying thing. It's Batman.
It's a sleigh.
And
they're sleighing.
and of course, yes, the Joker, I think, is sort of a broken mirror Santa Claus, let's say.
Yes.
Sure.
A jolly paunchy man, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
All right. David, do you have a pick for Hingle All the Way?
Well, I mean, you know, there are so many riches. You could do Maximum Overdrive, which is a horrible, horrible movie. There's Sudden Impact.
Oh,
where
sure.
You know you've got Go Ahead Make My Day
and a horribly filmed rape sequence.
All the holidays.
Happy holidays.
You've got the TV movie of Elvis where he plays Colonel Tom Parker.
Oh my.
He's no Tom Hanks.
No.
But boy does he hingle it up.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say it's not even a movie. I'm going to say watch the Twilight Zone episode, The Incredible World of Horace Ford, which is actually a pretty good story. It's from one of the weaker seasons of the Twilight Zone, but he's a man who goes back to his childhood. Mm-hmm. And as you do, it might be the weakest of the old man goes back to his childhood stories that they did on the Twilight Zone, but it's good for what it is.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we missed the correct answer, which was Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
That is true.
Oh, well.
But
or Hang 'Em High.
But that ends
Bloody Mama.
That ends the segment Hingle All the Way and brings us to our next segment.
Oh, no.
Hingle McCringleberry. Now, Pat Hingle died in 2009, 3 years before Key and Peele came on the air and gave us the sketch in which a football player is named Hingle McCringleberry. I wanted to know, fellas, what you think Pat Hingle's favorite Key and Peele sketch would have been. I'm going to start us off again. I think it would have been the parody of Saw that Key and Peele did, where they are basically trapped by the Jigsaw type character, and then they are complimenting him on how sophisticated his traps are and how much pain they're in, and it eventually drives Jigsaw insane. I think Pat Hingle, who probably had a pretty good sense of humor based upon his selection of roles, would have enjoyed that.
Okay, sounds good.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And David, why don't you go next this time? Is there a Key and Peele sketch that you think Pat Hingle would have enjoyed?
I think he would have loved the recurring sketch of Obama's anger interpreter.
Oh, sure.
Because that is just a great concept, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jason?
I think he would have watched episode one.
Okay.
Seen the first sketch and gone, what is all this nonsense?
Yes.
And turned mm-hmm. off the TV.
Well, that's fair enough. We don't really know what he would have thought. Well, okay. Well, that finishes our segment, Hingle McCringleberry, which leads us nicely mm-hmm. into another segment that I like to call Spurs That Jingle Jangle Hingle. And really, this is what the best Pat Hingle Western is. And of course, the answer is Hang 'Em High.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's...
All right.
That's
and
it.
Fellas, that concludes all the Pat Hingle segments that I thought of.
I was gonna pick David Robinson.
No.
I was gonna pick Tarantula's The Deadly Cargo, where he plays a guy named Doc. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go.
Which is very, very Western movie.
Well, there you go. Three great choices, one of which is more correct than the other. So that wraps up our triple segment of Pat Hingle appreciation. So we salute you, Pat Hingle.
I'm still looking forward to Hingle Bell Rock. Which are the songs?
No, oh, very.
You
good,
think
David.
he would have appreciated which three Christmas songs? I'm going to go with Hingle Bell Rock because, you know, you say the word jingle 17 times in the song. He would sing Hingle 17 times.
Mm.
What do you think his favorite Christmas songs would be?
I think his favorite Christmas song would be Jingle All the Way, because he would change the lyric to Hingle All the Way and point to himself very happily.
And I know for a fact that his favorite Christmas song was Hingle Bells by the Barking Dogs.
Ah,
yeah,
very good.
Very nice. Very nice. I will say, I spent this whole episode with my younger son just going, Pathingle. Pathingle.
Pathingle. Okay, so anyway, I'd like to go to a recurring segment called We Talk About the Episode that this episode
what?
Is about.
No! What? No! No! How dare you?
Rick, wearing a white suit, gives a secret sandwich order for roast beef and gefilte fish, which the secret code is that he can go visit Elisha Cook Jr. in the back because he's ice pick. We have not done a lot of episodes with ice pick.
This is our second.
That's right.
But ice pick is a great character. Elisha Cook Jr., great actor. Fun as the underworld connection. Rick goes there and he's looking for these two guys who might know something about what's going on here.
He's looking for Pat Hingle's former partners, or Garwood's former partners, who might have assumed new identities.
Yes. Slick and Morty.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Rick and Morty.
They time travel. And no.
But Slick, he says, oh, I remember him. William Daniels is his new name.
Mm-hmm. Who was really good in 1776.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the voice of Knight Rider. Yes, indeed.
And Saint Elsewhere.
And he says, hey, go see. So that's a lead. And then he says, hey, you know, also, you should go see my lawyer, says Garwood Huddle. Harry.
And William Daniels appeared in an episode of Cheers.
Okay. Hmm. Harry is a
Harry
is a shyster.
Played by that guy, Philip Sterling, mm-hmm. who has been in everything, but especially six episodes of Barney Miller.
They he was especially in those, you're right.
Over and over
he
and
was
over.
He was very much especially in those.
Yeah.
Yes, but he is a crooked attorney.
Yeah, and he knows it's Magnum because he's already been given the heads up by Garwood Huddle that he's going to be sending him there. And he, you know, he's like, doesn't want to give Magnum information, but he finally gives up and gives him some information. Magnum breaks in and is rifling through his drawers when he walks in. And he goes, who are you? And then he says, oh, okay, Magnum, the jig is up. Because you know that this guy is just, everything he says is a lie. My favorite line from this, the back and forth between Magnum and Harry the lawyer is, I looked in your phone directory or in your phone records and it said, Slick called you just last week. And we're looking for Slick. And he says, how many people named Slick call you? And he says, several. And they all call me. And I thought it was really great. I enjoyed the
I know ladies named Slick.
Yeah. I got guys named Slick. I got ladies named Slick. I got little old men named Slick. They all call me. I also like the fact that the idea that this guy, who's a crooked lawyer, takes meticulous phone notes.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
He's, always record your criminal conspiracies, please.
Well, books. You got the legal book and the not legal book. So he gives Magnum an address. Magnum goes there. It's like a columbarium or something, right? Like it's where the dead bodies are, and that's where Morty is because Morty died. And while Magnum is finding this out, someone takes a shot at him. But what a way to go that would have been for Magnum PI.
Well, at least you're right there.
Yeah,
they don't have to move the body.
Set you on fire and then stuff you in one of the bins.
It's very convenient. Yeah.
Uh huh. So he goes back to Morty and he's like, "All right, I'm gonna get you in trouble for trying to kill me." And he's like, "No, I don't know anything about it." He shouts a lot. He's burned his files.
The best thing, though, about the lawyer is earlier Magnum threatened him about like exposing some of his crooked cases. So when we return, he's got a fire going in his office.
I always liked that. I thought about putting a fireplace in here. And then Magnum points to his copy machine and it produces some papers and says, "Ah, look, isn't it great what you can make copies of files here?"
No, he goes, I think your copier is running low on ink, which is a good line.
And,
it's a dumb concept, but it's a good line.
And the response is, and you wonder why people shoot at you, which was really pretty good. Anyway, Magnum puts on some of that Cliff Clavin generic Pachismo cologne. There are running jokes for the rest of the episode about how it is a combination of someone's gym shorts and Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. So smelly. Magnum is smelly for the rest of the episode, fortunately.
And apparently it doesn't wash off. And
he took six baths. And it's still...
And it's because it's one of those things that's activated by your pheromones. So it's your natural scent. It's not that it's the cologne's scent.
Yes.
It's Magnum's scent.
So speaking of that son who was totally dead because of his boots, we see a television interview with Garwood's daughter-in-law and John Ratzenberger, where they argue about the kid's teddy bear on the TV news, where he's like, no, he has the bear. Like, literally, he's like, he has the bear. He has the bear right now. I can't tell you how I know exactly what the kid, he has the bear. And she's like, no, after he was kidnapped, the bear was down there. He's like, no, he has the bear.
In our living room. And this is literally... He's on the verge of shouting, "It's Chekhov's bear!"
Just
it's Chekhov's bear, damn it!
And I'm sitting there thinking, this is great television.
You're waiting for the news, the interviewer to say, maybe you could discuss this off the air.
Work out your issues privately, because a child is in danger here.
Uh-huh.
So, Yeah, it's, again, is that a clue? Yes, friends. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
TC, meanwhile, yeah. TC has used the generic car wax from Cliff Clavin himself and wrecked his van, and he's going to blame Magnum for that because I guess Magnum handed it to him or something. Whatever, who cares?
Unfortunately, off camera, so we do not get we to never see the van. Down.
Garwood and Higgins did that.
Yeah. So,
he gave it to him.
So they go to where they think Slick is going to be, and there's a security guard there, and they say, we're looking for William Daniels. And he says, you mean from 1776? And we say, no, not that William Daniels, the other William Daniels. And he says, I've never heard of him. And as he turns to go, this older security guard, Magnum, says, thanks for the help, Slick. And he says, no problem. And Magnum goes,
oldest trick in the book.
And he runs, leading to one of the most, okay, it's light entertainment at 8 o'clock on a Thursday.
Yep.
Or 9 o'clock on a Thursday. But
no,
but
it's 8 o'clock at this point.
Simon
and Simon.
So 8 o'clock, light entertainment. He runs out to the pool. Magnum chases him, and a sniper in a window in the complex above him shoots him dead. Not dead, just wounds him, Slick. And as the episode's going on, I continue to think, what?
How did the sniper know to be there?
How did the sniper know? How are they there? And later we find out who the guy is. There's actually a line of dialogue saying, look, I was just trying to scare Magnum off. I didn't know that guy would get in the way. And it's like, you told me to scare the PI away. Except, why were you there? And how are you in a room somewhere waiting for Magnum and or this guy to come out side to the pool? It doesn't
in
make
the back
a lick of sense.
We're skipping the other great moment from this scene, which is when Slick pulls a gun on Magnum, and Magnum in a very crowded pool area, we might add, and with a very shrieky woman, understandably, and
but not a line of women that he pushes into the pool, because that was last time.
Yeah,
that was the
last
episode. But And Magnum says, Slick, come on, I know you guys don't like guns. And Slick goes, no, that was the other two. That was Maury and Garwood. I love guns.
I always like them. Well, guess what? There's one that's just about to shoot you.
Yeah, well, so. And as he was shot, maybe he said, oh, that's the stuff.
Oh, I changed my mind.
But I like that they could have killed him, but they're like, no, we're going to get him patched up. He's wounded, but he's going to be okay. Oh, thank goodness Slick's going to be okay. Everybody was really worried about that. I love the mechanics of it, right? Where it's like the conspiracy of like, we were going to get to the bottom of this, but then they shot him, and Magnum turns around, and you look, and there's the open window, and you're like, oh, they're closing in on us, except no, it doesn't make any sense. But it's in the moment, it's very much like, oh no, what is going on here? Anyway, so they do the Magnum has figured out
his son.
Magnum has figured out that it's his son. And he says, like, look, your son, obviously your son dug it up, but maybe he didn't take it with him.
His son had a construction company and was
built the massage parlor building.
Built the massage parlor where apparently people climb through the windows and do all manner of abductions.
And Magnum says, unless he didn't take it with him, or maybe he didn't go. At which point we all nod and go, yeah, that's why he told you about that thing earlier, Magnum. They go to Ice Pick and try to find, we were talking about making new identities. Hey, Ice Pick. Maybe you made a new identity for Garwood Jr. Ice Pick's like, I can't disclose, even though I already just did it. But this time that was for Rick, and this time I'm not going to do it. And they're like, oh, but what about the little kid? You got to do it for the little kid. Do you have grandchildren, Ice Pick? And he's like, yeah, I do. I do. At which point he's like, yeah, okay, it's this guy. And done. Done. They find him immediately, but he sold his TV. He's living in a actually pretty nicely appointed apartment. But then again, however long he's been on this bender, he did have $200,000 when he started. But he's blown all the money, so that won't work. And there's the legacy of Garwood Huddle comes back here of like, well, he was talking about his grandson as his legacy, but here is his son is a total mess of what a legacy it is.
I would also like to point out at this point that they keep referring to the grandson as Little Garwood, which always presupposed the existence of bigger Garwoods, subsequently bigger Garwoods.
Yes.
Now they're all together.
It's like a Matryoshka doll of Garwoods. Yes.
Yes. David exactly. And I are both on the same page.
And
here.
While we're here, since we visited Ice Pick again, I'd just like to introduce another segment.
Okay.
From the creators of the cook, Elisha Cook, the thief, his wife and her lover, is a new segment that I like to call C is for Cookie. Yes, it's another game show.
Okay.
In which you must identify famous cooks. So, Jason, we'll start off with you.
Okay.
This famous cook was the owner of the Los Angeles Lakers in the 1970s.
That was Jack Kent Cook.
That's correct. Very good. David, your turn, and Jason, stand by to try and grab the steal if David misses. This cook is a middling comic.
Would that be Dane Cook?
You are correct. Wow.
Objection. Dane Cook's not a middling comic. He's a bad comic.
We try
We're
and
being
be
polite.
We try and be very polite here.
Like
on
a broad interpretation.
C is for Cookie.
Okay.
Jason.
Yes.
This cook was the star of 1999's She's All That. She's All That. David, get ready for the steal.
I'm there. I'm trying to remember part of the name.
I'm gonna say it was Tim Cook.
No, I'm afraid not. David, can you steal?
I mean, there's Tim Apple, but I'm not going there. Mm-hmm. It's Rachel Lee Cook.
That is correct. Oh, and this is our final question.
Never heard of her.
Our final question. This cook was on the ABC Sunday News program, David.
Oh, wow.
It's a cook, sort of, kind of a cook.
I'm going to say Bobby Flay.
No. Jason, can you steal? And for a tie game.
Yes. It was David Brinkley.
Very close. I was looking for Cookie Roberts. Yes, thank you. And that wraps up another exciting version of C is for Cookie from the producers of Elisha Cook, the thief, his wife, and her lover. Thank you, everyone.
Magnum has words of wisdom for Garwood Huddle and his son about how they should just stop yelling at each other and think bigger thoughts about that. But then suddenly the son's like, "What? Little Garwood is taken.
Yes.
What?" And he says, "Well, I hope you find him. And if you do, give him this my glove for me." And his old man is like, "Oh, I gave you that glove." He's like, "Yeah, and I was going to give it on." Magnum gets back in the car with Garwood and he's like, "Look, Garwood, I've got a plan." And then the voiceover comes in and says, I don't really have a plan. But he has a strong hunch. And it involves the paddy bear. Or as he might have said, it involves that second Chekhov's gun that we mentioned earlier.
Well, and he starts, and before he even gets to it, he starts into this whole story about when he was little, he had a little stuffed duck.
Yes.
That was for his second Easter. And
his second Easter.
Everywhere with that duck.
Yeah.
And you go, I wonder if he's talking about the bear. No, it can't be the bear. He's talking about a duck.
Yeah, but it is the bear, the paddy bear.
But it's the bear.
It's the paddy bear. Anyway, they go back to the house, the easily broken into house, and the mom comes to the door, and she says, well, they're like, where's Cliff Clavin himself? And she said, well, no, Walt, his name, plays Jin with his buddy Norm. Norm!
Now, I want to know something here. It's 1984 when this episode aired. John Ratzenberger was a kind of a late addition to the Cheers regulars. He was always sort of one of the boys at the bar.
Yeah,
but he wasn't He wasn't like part of the cast till like season two.
He was recurring in season one, but he wasn't really a character.
Right. Yeah. Were they trying to do a Cheers reference here? Almost certainly, right?
I think so.
I think
yes.
so. His buddy Norm. Yeah. He's playing Jen with his buddy Norm, and she doesn't really want to hear it. And they're like, "No, no, he's totally the one who did
this."
And
now here's another one of those things where, you know, we've got the Barney Miller guy, we've got Doogie Howser's mom. Mm-hmm. Norm is played by Dick Durock, also known, probably best known as the Swamp Thing.
Okay. The movie.
So
Swamp Thing.
Movie and series.
All right. Well, he's Norm here, and he's the guy who says, you told me to scare the PI away. I didn't know someone else would get in the way. How was I in that window? I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't know.
Well, see, Normie, the thing about scaring people off is you have to have a plausible gunman, just like Lee Harvey Oswald was perched in the Texas Book Depository on that fateful day in 1963.
You know, I mean, there is a grassy knoll there by the swimming pool, but you don't want to be back there. You want to be up in the window.
Whereas that allowed the CIA and the boys to carry out the assassination, or so one theory goes.
You want a pool where everybody's got a gun, and they're just a lot of fun.
Back and to the left, Norm. Back and to the left.
Why didn't they cast John Ratzenberger in JFK? That would have been great.
You know, it's a little known fact about the transmissions on those cars that they jerk a little bit and they make your head go from the back to the left.
Talk about your Oswald, your prison transfer procedures there, Normie.
So they're feeding the kid Pat Plan baby food, which the kid doesn't like because it's gross. And Magnum's like, look, Garwood, we're not going to just burst right in. I got a plan. Here's the plan. And Garwood, being very Luther Gillis-like at various points in this episode, basically just bashes in. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fist fight. And he's like, no, I couldn't lose. I'm tired of selling that Pat crap stuff. And there's more fighting. And then Garwood has a gun, and he's going to shoot.
Well, you have Magnum fighting Swamp Thing.
Yes.
Except it's wonderful watching it in today's televisions because Magnum transmorphs from Selleck to Tom Lupo and back and forth and back and forth, and it's kind of beautiful.
There is a particularly amazing thing that, again, in high definition when you can pause it, which was not the case at the time, where Magnum leaps off of the porch of the house that they're staying over at Norm's house in order to tackle one of the guys. And the leap is done by his stuntman, and his stuntman is there with his face showing for a kind of a long time in high definition.
Yeah.
And I backed it up to take a picture to send to you fellows. but in the moment I was like, come on. And I know why it's like that. I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know why. And they were like, we're going to get away with it. And on standard def on CBS on 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, they did. But
well,
now
see,
I'm
no,
like,
I mean,
come
the
on.
Television sets of those days were tiny and pixelated.
The NTSC
so could
only, covers the 480 lines.
You know, cathode ray tubes that were, you know, 22 inches.
Yeah.
You're not going to see that kind of detail. You're just going to see a mustache.
His stuntman's got a little gray. And so as he jumps, the wind kind of like the air pushes his hair a little. And you see the gray at the temples. And you're like, that's not Magnum. But it's okay. Anyway, there's a boring fist fight. And then there is a moment though where Pat Hingle's holding the gun on Cliff Clavin on John Ratzenberger, and he's got a baseball
bat, and he
shoots the baseball bat, and he's like, okay, I give up, and Pat Hingle says, hell, I was aiming at his chest, because Magnum's a nice shot, and he's like, I was aiming at his chest.
But again, this is a scene where Cliff Clavin's all, come on, you don't shoot people, you don't like guns, and this gang liked guns more than people let on.
Yeah,
I listened to Phil Hartman at the beginning. I know you don't use a gun.
No, I listened to the whole Prime podcast about you.
It only now occurs to me that the presence of John Ratzenberger means this is a Pixar film, isn't it?
That's right.
I want to propose something,
which is we
instantly pivot this podcast to be a true crime podcast about Garwood Huddle.
Yeah. Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
The Huddle gang.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, cut to final scene. They're at the minimum security prison. Oh, you don't know it yet. They look like they're at a park because they're totally at a park. But The son is now not dead and out in the open, and he's sitting there next to his ex-wife slash widow, and they seem to be getting on, and there's a line about, like, oh, maybe they'll get back together. And I'm like, they're not ever, ever getting back together, please. But hey, they have a happy picnic. It's great. And then the shot pulls back, and we reveal that, of course, Garwood is back inside. This is the minimum security prison, or a city park with a chain link fence placed in front of it for the shot. And yes, that ends the legacy of Garwood.
And the fact that Garwood and Garwood Jr. are both wearing the same colored shirt,
yes,
also tips the hand. Presumably, the grandson is too.
Yes.
So that they can just have all what three a legacy generations in prison.
Uh huh. And that's the legacy of Garwood Huddle.
The two-year-old knows what he did.
I think this is. So. I thought this was an okay episode. I think the plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I think Garwood Huddle is Pat Hingle is kind of interesting. I liked seeing Elisha Cook Jr.
Yeah,
it's not a great episode, but it's not. Yeah. I'd say it's not a bad episode. It's kind of entertaining. It doesn't really use the supporting cast very well. Higgins really only has two scenes. Rick has one scene. TC, you know, gets to be like Roger E. Mosley was like, man, I got one scene this week and all I did was complain about wax.
Well, like, he does get to rescue the guy from the pool when
he jumps in the lone pool.
That's true, great. And then they made me get wet.
Yeah. And I didn't even get to rip off my shirt and show the
show
TC
my suspenders.
Guns. Yes. And, I think it's a good it's a fun episode. It's probably more fun in retrospect when you can see all your TV pals come back together again.
Sure.
Like, oh, hey, there's John Ratzenberger and Doogie Howser's mom.
And it's
great.
It's silly. It's a silly kind of episode.
Yeah.
Thing, what are you doing here?
it plays like kind of a not great Rockford episode. Which is fine.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of Magnum episodes are.
Yeah. Which brings us to our next segment, which is a letter from a listener.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
This letter is from listener Chris. Again, you can send your email to magnum@theincomparable.com. Chris writes, hi, guys. That's the catchphrase. When I eventually write my award-winning email to the Magnum podcast crew, I'm planning to cover a lot of topics. I'll touch on the fact that I think they do a really good job of reviewing the episodes, even if I disagree with their assessment of some of them. And I'll also say that when I rewatched Magnum PI as an adult, I was impressed at how well most of the series really stood up over time. I'd also write that I was disappointed with the Magnum PI reboot on several levels. In my email, I'll also say there are a couple of ways the Magnum show really stands out. The first is that Don Belisario managed to come up with a premise that makes a lot of the episodes at least semi-plausible. We've gone from serial killers to movie sets to being marooned on an island, and even when the episode gets a little bit ridiculous, you can at least nod your head and go along with it instead of getting thoroughly taken out of the show. I also say Magnum also stands out because the characters all seem like they have their own lives that they're living off screen. Rick and TC aren't just waiting around for Magnum to use their services. They've got their own lives, and when they get dragged into the story, it's because they're doing a favor for a friend. That is definitely true. Well, one of the things about it that I, Jason, appreciate is that Magnum comes to them and they're like, geez, Thomas, do I really have to do this? And it's like, yeah, I got stuff to do. Finally, I'd write about how one of the themes of Magnum always seems to be he's recovering from the trauma of Vietnam. It makes a lot of sense to me. He doesn't talk much about his experiences in Vietnam. He seems more focused on having a good time and living for the moment than thinking about the future. And in the episode Black on White, he even comes out and says, the islands have a way of easing pain and helping you forget the past, which is probably why I'm here. This might be a little deep for a podcast about an 80s detective show, but it really resonated with me. I think we've talked about that, this is the first sort of like show about Vietnam veterans, and that is definitely an aspect of it that's interesting.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Chris comes up with some suggestions for a few episodes you might like. He says Black on White with Ian McShane, Skin Deep with Ian McShane.
Ian McShane?
What?
As a different person. Beauty, a couple of weeks later.
Save some roles for the rest of us.
Beauty
Ian
Knows
McShane.
No Pain, the one where
with
Magnum
Ian
has
McShane?
Ian McShane play Beauty or Pain in that episode?
Yes. That's the one where Magnum has to pay back all of DC's favors. And The Look, another solid episode, says Chris. Anyway, that's what would be in my award-winning email if I get around to writing it. Bye, guys, and keep up the good work, Chris. Thanks, Chris. We don't give awards for email, but if we did, you would have to write an award-winning email for us, and then
if we did have an award, it would be the Listener Chris Award.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
Right? Yeah. We've got the Could Listener be. Blair Award.
Sure.
Sure. Well, this is, yeah, this is much better. Unless Chris recommended an episode and we watched it and we didn't like it, in which case Lister Chris could win the Listener Blair Award.
Yeah. Wow.
Layers upon layers. Mm. And to truly be an award-winning email, wouldn't the little voice in your head have to read it instead of Jason?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yes. Yes. I knew you were thinking that.
Yeah. That's right. And I'd like to introduce our final segment for this episode, which is what's on this podcast next time. And the answer is season 2, episode 12, Ghost Writer. Ooh, a spooky ghost. Ooh. No, there are no ghosts in Ghost Writer.
Or are there?
Uh-huh.
No.
I can do about 20 more Pat Hingle bits. There's Hingle Hingle Hits a Single, where we talk about Pat Hingle's favorite baseball teams, clearly the Tigers, since he wears Magnum's Tigers hat throughout the episode.
There's a segment called Pat Swingle, where we rate which of the Swingle Sisters sketches on SNL Pat Hingle would have preferred.
Mm-hmm. There's Pat Shingles, where he gives you medical advice.
Yeah, yeah, you got to get that. If you're over 50, you should have the Hingle vaccine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And with that, I'd like to say to Philip Michaels and David J. Laura, I've been Jason Snell. We're signing off now. Bye, guys.
I was aiming for his chest.
Hingle all the way, everyone.